This episode of Point Shot is brought to you by BenchClears. You can now visit benchclears.com and use promo code Area51SentMe to get 10% off on your order. So that is any of their air mesh style tanks and shorts, all of which are NHL officially licensed product. So you can support your team all summer long with BenchClears.
Welcome to another episode of the Point Shot Hockey Podcast. I'm joined now with Bill and Malcolm. Obviously, pretty crazy week that we've just had, or a couple weeks now, because we would have gone last week, but that was day one of the NHL entry draft. So instead of making that episode completely irrelevant immediately, we waited and compiled what ended up being like 18 contracts in 48 hours, plus the entry draft, plus the expansion draft. We got a lot to cover today, guys.
Certainly do.
Before we start, what are we supposed to call you now, Sean? Sean Wojnarowski? Sean Scarabelli? Sean Friedman? I mean, this guy's breaking news now. First on a TV offer sheet, right?
Just like Les Sean from my French sources.
Sean. I like it.
Yeah, I look back and I'm like, yeah, okay, I worded it pretty clumsily, but the report was accurate. So I'll
who
stick with that.
You can have Sean bombs, right?
Sean bombs.
Yeah. You know, and we'll never know for sure because, of course, Price wasn't taken.
I know. That's, you know, I was kind of hoping that he'd get taken just so I could be like, see, I told you. But I also didn't want them to offer Sheet Pettersson. So
yeah, exactly. That would have been evil of you, Sean. I'm just selfish, frankly.
Yeah, it was a real catch 22 at that point where ended up becoming okay with really whatever happened. There's some silver linings in there.
Reports did come out saying that the team was pretty scared, and they still are, of a potential offer sheet. So I think you're right.
See, and it was reported too after that if Carey Price was taken by Seattle, that, you know, the fact that they lost their franchise goaltender in the face of their franchise for nothing, that they would need to turn around and do something with that money to show that it wasn't for nothing. And I was like, exactly, yeah, that's exactly where I was going with that. And so then, you know, offer sheets, Jack Eichel, stuff like that end up coming onto the table because you've got $10.5 million literally burning a hole in your pocket, because if you don't get off of doing something with that money, you look pretty brutal. Like your bet blows up in your face.
What I want to know is Seattle or the NHL doing some sort of investigation into this Carey Price injury? Because, of course, you know, these reports come out suddenly, you know, not after the NHL, you know, the Stanley Cup final was awarded, that, if I recall correctly, Carey Price played every single minute of.
Yeah.
And, of course, Shea Weber, too. And then, of course, oh, wow, now he's suddenly got these two injuries that may keep him out for the whole year next year. The whole year, you know, why
maybe
would you
even career threatening?
Maybe even career threatening. And no, actually, he's gonna be fine for October. Like, even if Seattle, you know, wasn't really planning on taking him, I'd be, you know, like, I know this is seemingly what I'm doing these days on freaking Twitter is, you know, trying to get the league to actually police itself and be consistent. But like, I'd be, you know, again, if I was a Seattle fan, I'd be absolutely livid with how Montreal circumvented the expansion draft.
Well, apparently Seattle's pretty pissed about it.
Yeah.
It should be.
Would their fans want Price though, you think? I mean, at that cap hit, seemed like a win for both sides at the end of the day, but I don't know.
I think the biggest thing out of it is that they kind of made a mockery of the expansion draft process. Like, they kind of yanked him around, right? And
that's a good point.
And like, the process, you're supposed to have all your medical information for everybody that's made available given to Seattle so that they can then make an informed decision on whatever they're doing. And then as far as I know, they never did get that for Carey Price. Because it was up in the air, right? So because it was unknown, these concerns, there wasn't an accurate medical file provided for Carey Price. So that's the part where, you know, if I'm Seattle, I'm a little chapped about, because I don't know. I don't know how serious they were about taking Seattle, but there was obviously enough concerns that Montreal felt like they needed to kind of muddy the waters and try to make it a more sure bet.
Because, of course, they do the same thing with Weber, too, which does seem like a more significant injury, but same thing, played every single minute of the Stanley Cup final, and now, you know, suddenly has a career-threatening injury, and, you know, no effort made between the Stanley Cup final and, you know, until the week before the expansion draft to do anything about that. Because again, you know, where's the motivation? Why would you, unless it's, you know, the right thing to do that, you know, you should, but clearly, you know, the right thing to do in the Montreal Canadiens is a sentence that, you know, apparently is not ever, you know, two phrases never in the same sentence. So like they had two players that they would have had to protect and you know, expose two more better players. And now, you know, Cale Fleury is essentially the best player that, you know, they had to suck from, you know, a team that went to the Stanley Cup final. You think, you know, you may get a good player from that team.
Yeah, somebody more NHL caliber. Nothing against Cale Fleury, but that's a team that went to the finals, like you said.
Yeah.
Montreal's just taking a page out of Tampa's books with all this shady business going on, eh?
Well, yeah. And Tampa does it again with acquiring the Seabrook contract.
I know.
Right.
Amazing. Like,
At what point is the NHL going to go, okay, listen, guys, we know that there is at least this. We know that this isn't expressly forbidden or against the rules or illegal or however you want to phrase it by the CBA. But you're clearly exploiting a salary cap in this situation, acquiring a guy who literally has already declared that he's never going to play again. For the expressed reason that you'll be able to maximize and now build an $88 million team.
Well, and I think that's where, as long as there's the quote unquote spirit of the rules in the rule book, that's where it muddies the waters up, right? As soon as you take out that term and it's like by the letter of the law, then everybody has a clearer understanding of what cap circumvention is allowed and what cap circumvention is not allowed. There is always going to be cap circumvention. That's the whole concept of having a salary cap, is that you've got to wiggle around and find the maximum amount of space and room within those guidelines. But as long as you have that follow the spirit of the rule, I think it makes it really difficult to say, right? Like you bring up valuable points. Why should another team benefit from a contract they never signed? Why should they be able to go out and then trade and acquire pure LTIR space?
Right, and I don't blame any team for doing this. I mean, this is like
no, they should do it
to me. Yeah, like full credit to Breezebrough and the Lightning for taking advantage and just building such a juggernaut, right? But this is something that the league has to do instead. But we'll see if they do anything about it.
The idea behind the salary cap was to create parity in the league, so you didn't have these super teams and you didn't have these bottom feeders, and you know, you had the same teams winning the cup and just, you know, being able to spend and spend and spend. And you know, again, if you I don't know if you remember the pre-salary cap era, Bill, but you know, again, it was just ridiculous, you know, the Rangers and Detroit and Detroit. Their budgets, you know, if they had a bad player, no big deal. You know, they could just send him elsewhere, buy him out. The road.
Yeah.
You know, didn't matter whatsoever. You know, it's just cash that they had plenty of. And the idea, again, of course, was to create a parity between these teams. And now, because of allowing some teams to exploit and circumvent the cap and not, and then the last tweet I read, apparently JP Barry on Donnie and Dolly this morning was talking, said that $9.5 million in Tampa Bay is not $9.5 million in Vancouver.
I saw that.
Just in case you need a little further explanation on what he's referring to there, it's not the fans, it's not the weather. He's referring to the income tax rates.
Yeah.
And again, because the salary cap is, you know, calculated in pre-cap or pre-tax dollars, what you make in Tampa Bay as a tax-free income-free state, Tampa is a tax-free, Florida is a tax-free state. So the 41 games a year that they play in Tampa Bay, they don't pay any income tax on, versus the 41 games that Canucks or any other Canadian team, they pay very high marginal tax rates on. So your actual take-home pay is very different if you make $9.5 million in Tampa and $9.5 million in Vancouver. And I understand, because I have had this debate many times with a certain Twitter lawyer, that there are advantages and certain strategies that you can do to help do that. But the fact remains, players and agents don't see that. They don't care about that. Mm-hmm. They still see the income tax rates and the actual take-home pay. And if you recall back to the Steve and Stamkos negotiations, you know, initially Stamkos felt like he was getting lowballed, but Tampa eventually convinced them, and in a way they were right, that he in fact is taking home the exact same money that Taves and Kane were in Chicago, because even though they were making $10.5 million. So again, how is this fair? Especially when what we're doing in the salary cap was brought in to introduce parity. So to me, it's frustrating on all ends when, especially again, Vancouver was one of those larger market teams that was able to spend more than some of these other teams. Now what's happening? Some of our profits are going to these bottom feeder teams, or teams. And when I say bottom feeder, I mean in profits. And now they're taking our money that we're spending as fan dollars to then sign players away from us.
Yeah.
So like we're just getting screwed on all ends of this thing. And obviously, as people probably know from my Twitter feed, it drives me nuts.
But do you expect the league to do something about the whole discrepancy between tax? I mean, that seems like overcomplicate things, right?
I think it's an easy fix. Is you just calculate in after-tax dollars. Everyone's salary cap, you know, is different because it factors in there. And, you know, when you make a trade, you just have to factor in that, you know, when you trade a guy and his contract's 5.5, well, to his acquiring team, it probably isn't going to be 5.5 anymore. It's going to be, you know, either 6 or 5, just for, you know, round number sake here. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's overly complicated. It's certainly not as complicated as LTI is.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, good actually point. I think that's a pretty fair solution. I like that you bring up that point, because there was a bit of waves made of Kevin Epp, the player agent for OEL, and Jake Virtanen and Travis Hamonic coming on the radio, or with Donnie and Dolly as well, and saying that because of the fans in the market and how unfairly they treat these players, that's why they have to spend more to get these players to come here, which I think is complete bunk. And I've said this a million times, there's nothing unique about Vancouver. Stop thinking that we're so special. We're not. Like, we're just a normal market like everybody else. We're just very passionate. And that's okay. A lot of players want to play in passionate markets. That's great. They want to be in the spotlight. Some don't. Some don't want to pay high tax. Some want to pay less tax. Some people want players want to play on the beach, on a city that neighbors the beach. Some want to be in a big city. Some want to be in Canada. Some don't. Like, these are all personal preferences that vary from player to player. Let's stop trying to vilify our one potential con of living in a beautiful city in Canada, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, right on the ocean, playing for a passionate market that cares about hockey. Like, I don't get it. Like, stop trying to undersell Vancouver. Vancouver is a great place to play. I would give anything to play for the Canucks if I was a player.
To those players, I say, see ya. I don't. If you are worried,
we don't
about
want you
being
anyways.
Held accountable by the fan base here, then right. I don't want you here either. To me, that's a massive red flag. That if a player is coming here and saying, "Well, listen, I need to be paid more because of the crap I'm going to get," a conversation that clearly is not happening between agent and player is the reason players or the fans are hard on you is because you're being overpaid in Vancouver.
Yeah,
everyone in Vancouver as a sports fan knows what you're being paid, and as a recent example, everyone hated Brandon Sutter at 4.3. Everyone loves him at 1.15. There's a perfect example. So, agent, here speaking directly to you, if your player wants to play in a big market, beautiful city, chance to win, maybe tell him that you don't need every fucking dollar, and to take a fair contract, and don't try to chase and try to get it overpaid. Because explain to the guy that you're still going to make a very nice living. But if we take maybe $500,000 less, that's still, again, a fair contract. The fans aren't going to be all over you like they were if you're making a 6x6 contract. So ultimately, you're making that decision now. If you stretch your contract value, then you're setting the bar higher for your expectations. That's your call.
And if you don't live up to that.
And if you don't live up to that, then you're going to be ridiculed in Vancouver. So if again, to me, if that's a problem, then goodbye. I do not want you on our team. Play for someone else. See you out the door. Goodbye. Not even questioning it.
Then that means they already know
that
that's a negative value.
That I'm holding back right now. But bye.
If they already know that it's a negative value contract going in for them, then I don't want that contract either.
Well,
right?
Nothing to do with you. So, don't care how good a player you are.
Yeah. I think that's the main takeaway, and people need to realize that there's a very big difference between a player and their contract. You know, like when the Tucker Poolman announcement came out, I was like, okay, like I could live with Tucker Poolman, that's cool. But it was because we had signed so many cheap contracts that I was expecting it to be around $1 million, right? I was like, cool, like, you know what, pretty handy depth guy for $1 million. That's nice work, Jim. It was two and a half.
If you take up the Poolman contract, which really, really isn't that bad. Like it's not great. 4 years, it's not great, but $2.5 million, like it's, ultimately, even me, I'm not freaking out about that one too much. But if you take that contract out and just look at everything else that Jim Benning did,
fantastic.
Again, I don't go A plus because there isn't like killer contract steal. Oh my God, I can't believe we got that guy locked up for, that much term or that much year or anything like that. But, the other thing I rant about frequently is, UFA should never be used for long-term big money contracts. It's only for complementary depth pieces on short-term deals. And the number of, 1 year deals. And even I know, there's been debate about the Halak deal. But I
like the Halak deal too.
I kind of like that. Every other goalie got significantly more money, which was hard for us to factor in this year and a little bit easier for us to factor in next year. So having that over 35 player was a smart move that we could, structure with significant bonuses. So, to me, what happened in negotiations though is, hey, we just need to spread your cap hit over 2 years. Playing 10 games, that's not exactly a difficult a goal to achieve to hit, that major bonus there.
Unless you're Sutter.
Sure. But, as a backup goalie, again, of course, that means at a bare minimum to not hit it. That means, Thatcher Demko is playing 73 games. Maybe let's throw Mikey a couple just to make that somewhat realistic, but still no, right? There's, 2% chance, the astronomical, I throw a small number at you, those odds that he doesn't get that. So, but again, ultimately, I respect that move. I think that was a smart move. The Sutter contract, as soon as you saw 1.15, I don't know about you, I almost tweeted it. I was busy that morning, and I wish I did. It just so clearly to me screamed, this is a cap contract in, yes. in meaning like they've structured and done this with that specific number in mind for cap purposes. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know what they are, but again, if you listen to the, I guess, you know, there's a new van cast coming today, but I guess Wednesday's van cast, Drancer goes in and explains, you know, the advantages of that contract. And, you know, just a couple little things like that to me, again, hey, you know, I'm as big a critic as Jim of anyone, but all in all, Pullman contract aside, that was some very tidy business.
I completely agree with you guys, but the one thing that I think fans should keep in mind is that this is still like a job for them. So I don't blame them for trying to take the most money they could. But at the same time, if you want to maximize your earnings, then you have to know that the risk, there's like a risk associated with it in terms of the criticism, right? So 100%. If you want to make everything you could, then you also can't keep on complaining about, you know, fans calling you out for playing poorly.
And
I
completely agree.
It seemed kind of strange that Ekman Larson's agent was the one to come out and say that, because like OEL wanted to come to Vancouver, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's why, again, it's the agent was working. He has a job, and he had a message he wanted to convey. Because again, of course, what is the message of that is you guys should be paying my players more to play here, right? He's just trying to drive up the, you know, and you know, hey, fair enough. Like the agent should be doing anything in his power to try to get players as much as they can. And again, to be clear, I don't fault any player for maximizing his value and trying to get every dollar, but then realize what you're doing in that and don't then bitch and complain and go, you know, it's hard in Vancouver because people complain because I'm overpaid and I don't show up to work and do my job.
You can't have it both ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. Provide that value and nobody's going to complain. I did find it interesting that it was Epp that came out and said that, because he was kind of talking about Virtanen, right? And how unfairly he was treated here in Vancouver, which I think is such baloney. Like, think about the fans doing Shotgun Jake, all these type of things to try to rally and support him. Think about the lengths that Tanbeer went to support Virtanen forever. All we ever wanted was for him to reach his potential, and he never did. And then the off-ice issues really came to the front this past year. So how, like, where in there is a fan supposed to treat you better? You know, like, you act like a fool off the ice and get into all sorts of trouble, and fans are supposed to now appreciate you? Well, like, what are we talking about here?
I hate to go right back to the van cast, but again, I think Drancer said it best when he was like, maybe just show up to camp in shape once. Just one time show up to camp, you know, ready to go, and not be a story about you being out of shape and unprepared and unready to go. Maybe just one time. Of you know, what was it, 7 years? Like, maybe just once. Like,
what did he expect, right? I mean, like, right, that's looking at Dustin Byfuglien.
What was there to cheer for? Again,
there's nothing that he gave.
We literally made up a game to try to rally behind the guy, and got him some ad spots where he was able to get some car ads saying, I'll be driving the car, not riding shotgun. Like, clearly, you don't even get the joke, but whatever.
I mean, he was a passenger most of the 7 years, so I give him that.
That's good. We could not have done more for that kid.
No.
So again, like, and that's why I immediately just rolled my eyes and moved on for those comments. And that's like, again, I don't know if you saw the other, JP line about, you know, oh, I, you know, my, you know, we love Vancouver. I get a kick out of it.
Of course he loves Vancouver. he represents the Sedins, Patterson, Hughes. He's going to get paid for Vancouver.
Yeah.
He has to say that.
Yeah. I don't understand. Like, that's just the thing, right? Like, every team's the same. Different agents will, you know, try to leverage. I don't put a whole lot of stock into what individual agents say about a situation that directly revolves around their player, their client, because it's clearly leverage, right? Like, they're posturing. And if you can't see that, then, like, they're trying to gain community support or market support for their client. And what he was trying to do with OEL was trying to soften the blow of him coming in with his mega contract and having these lofty expectations and trying to just be like, well, give him a chance, be nice, but also be nice to Jake. And it's like, that's just not going to happen, right? Like, we'll give benefit of the doubt to OEL until we see whatever bounce back we're being promised looks like. But like, I have no time for Jake Virtanen.
No.
Yeah. Speechless. Speechless, like, you know, there's just so much to unpack, you know, in this last. The other thing that, of course, is driving me nuts about this trade, of course, I'm very clear on record that I absolutely hate the deal, is whenever Benning talks about it, he talks about the primary piece we got is number one defenseman OEL and top nine forward. He's not even using top six forward with Garland. And he seems like he's the secondary piece. And everyone who's defending the deal is like, well, hey, like, if you just look at it as the ninth pick for Garland, that's not bad. And I again say, no, that is bad. But also, that's not even what Jimbo thinks he's got here. He thinks he has a top nine winger. And again, to me, to pay a first round pick, a ninth overall pick for a top nine winger who is already 25, like, that's not young. That's, again, if you look at the wins above replacement graph, that's exactly when we start to see the curve flatten out and then start to dip. So he's no spring chicken here. We have, again, these five prime years, you know, in the contract. And then after that, because of the style he plays, undersized physical player, I do not expect him to be a good player into his 30s, but he'll, you know, be a good player for 5 years. So again, we traded an 18-year-old, 6'2", right-handed shot. Another thing Jimbo mentioned that, yeah, it's really hard to find these right-handed shots these days. Like,
yeah. I mean, he found a bunch of them in free agency, but they're all depth guys. He signed all of them.
And again, in defense of the Pullman contract, just to prove my objectivity here, there wasn't a single right-handed defenseman that wasn't overpaid in these last couple of days. And you know, looping back to another, you know, great agent story. You guys remember when apparently Travis Hamonic was willing to play for any team in the league now and not just the Western Conference team? Wasn't that hilarious, eh? It's funny that he ended up signing back in a Western Conference team. I found that
for a raise.
Coincidence. He ended up getting that raise, eh? Because apparently, you know, he was willing to go sign anywhere else. So we folded like a cheap there.
You know what? I'll give about the trade. I don't buy the bounce back for OEL, but maybe he bounces back a little bit. But I don't understand the first, like, that he's being called the number one defenseman. We have Quinn Hughes in our roster. That's very clearly our number one defenseman. I like Garland a lot, though.
Is that Jimbo negotiating? Do you think he's, you know, going like, well, no, hey, Quinn, maybe you're not actually a number one defenseman. You're maybe more of a number two. That just actually occurred to me. So sorry to interrupt, but
I would be wildly impressed if he was like, actually, you know what? You're a number two guy now, and we're going to pay you as such. I'd be wildly impressed. I don't know. Like, I just,
sorry, but you were saying calling OEL a number one defenseman and Garland. Yeah,
I like Garland a lot. Like, I think Garland's going to come in. I have him, I'm guessing, on Bo's wing is where I have him, like maintaining the lottery line, the lotto line, and then having Garland, Horvat, probably Hoglander. Or Pearson.
I think people are all, I don't know, you know, if people remember, Garland's not a big guy. I think he's only 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah, he's small.
So I don't know if you want, you know, Hoglander and him on the same line, which again, to me, is another. They play
fairly big, though.
You know, fair enough, but I still think you just want that size. Maybe again, this is my old hockey boy in me, but I want, you know, a sniper, a physical power forward, and a playmaker on each forward line. And, you know, even though, they Hoglander as well is good at retrieving pucks, I don't know if I see that as an ideal line. Which is part of, like, I
well, then Pearson actually earns his contract and ends up being a top six player. Because
I was going to say there is, I kind of wish we got Dvorak, Christian Dvorak, not Garland.
I really wanted Dvorak too.
Younger, can also play center.
Okay, I'll throw this at you because I've been flipping this trade around in my head a million different ways to try to make sense of what is for what. And I, for the life of me, do not understand the second and seventh round picks going from Vancouver to Arizona instead of the other way around. Like, if they, what Arizona's done is they've cut all of the cap beyond this season. There's like five or six contracts that are still on the books beyond this season, which is phenomenal. So, I mean, Louis Erickson, Roussel, Beagle, like they don't care because this isn't their, they're not going for it this year anyways. They don't care. 1 year, they'll take it. What they didn't want was OEL and his mega contract of six more years. So we get them to retain less than $1 million, just shy of $1 million. And then we cough up a second and a seventh for that retention. That seems like a really steep price for 900,000. Like, to me, we should have got either more retention or another asset or two.
I completely agree. To me, again, what it speaks to, or sorry, what all Jimbo's comments speak to is that he did not perceive and obviously trade for OEL as a negative value contract.
Yeah,
he thinks he's traded for a number one defenseman who, yes, is paid into his 30s, but clearly based on the return, because again, I break it down too. Like again, no chance would I give up the number nine pick straight up for Garland, right?
Yeah.
So not only did we do that, but we gave up another second, and like as I think I mentioned on our the live that we did, just like how the hell did they get? a future seventh, like really, really who cares? But like still, just like how in that negotiation were they able
where
to
did
go,
that
like,
come up? And they're like,
the ninth overall pick and the second, you know, next year's second to take on, and you know, yeah, we're taking on $12 million of bad cap, but you know, again, it's only 1 year and we're clearly punting on this year anyway. So we need a little bit more.
If we're going to retain anything on this albatross contract that we're handing you,
yeah,
we need a seventh as well.
Kind of need a seventh too.
Yeah, it was strange. So I'm confused about that. I did like, however, that, I didn't like this part. The another promise that they're going to recoup draft picks. It felt really empty. But then he goes and trades Nate Schmidt for a third, and I was like, holy smokes, we actually recouped one draft pick. I'm flabbergasted. And cut cap.
Well, for the first time since he traded Kevin Bieksa. Like, that was literally the last time that we have dumped cap and brought in a draft pick.
Yeah.
And again, of course, we'll remind everyone this was pretty much the exact same pick that we traded away from him. That, of course, I said was not a good idea to take on that bad cap and got absolutely lambasted for. So I absolutely took the opportunity to dunk on everyone the other day when it came back because I was, people were, you know, and
we were guaranteed more value back.
And people had almost convinced me that maybe it was a good deal and that we were going to, you know, be able to actually, so I went, okay, maybe we get the future second that we traded away back for Schmidt. And hey, and you know, you get a year Nate Schmidt, you know, you improve your pick, then that absolutely is a trade win. But you bring in Nate Schmidt, which is the real thing that most people don't talk about is the opportunity cost of those $6 million. Maybe there were some other guys that we could have signed if we didn't allocate $6 million to Nate Schmidt. So there's a negative right there. And again, of course, now...
There was a guy named Tyler Toffoli that
right.
He was around. He might have been pretty interesting to keep.
And then maybe a local kid from Richmond, could have played that
Troy Stetcher?
Middle,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, just an idea off the top of our heads, right?
Yeah, just some ideas just, for that $6 million
percolating. Yeah. So the so clearly, you know, there's some intrinsic negative value there. And then again, of course, Winnipeg is going to finish ahead of Vancouver, so we're moving down to in the third round of this draft. The pick that we traded away will ultimately be a better pick than the one that we acquired. So that trade is officially a loss. I'm no longer talking about it. No longer feel free to slide into my mentions about it. It's officially a loss for Jimbo. End story, end debate. It's over.
I was really hoping. I, after the Ristolainen trade, I was like, Schmidt's worth a second at least. Like, we're talking second rounder.
Wayne were hilarious on that little thing. You guys started dreaming like, oh my God. You know, I think we could probably trade 25-year-old Wayne Gretzky for Ristolainen. And maybe, I will imagine what we can get for Eichel. I'm thinking Lemieux and Jager. And you guys were absolutely punch drunk. I tried to calm you guys down and slap you guys senseless, but you were not having it. The two of you were the sweetest little dreamers that I ever did see on that live.
Everything was looking rosy at that moment. Yeah,
everything was sunshine and rainbows.
You watch, it was funny because like the Gosses Bear contract trade had me worried because I was like, well, shoot, like if a year of young Shane Gosses Bear costs that much to toss, what is Nate Schmidt going to cost to get rid of?
Yeah.
And then Ristolainen happens. I was like, well, shoot, there's no precedence anymore at all. Like everything's out the window. We have nothing to go off. That was
exactly my comment to you. I'm like, no, everything's crazy. The market, young right-handed defensemen are rare. Nathan Schmidt's not young. Schmidt's not left-hand. You know, he's left-handed, even though he can play the right side. You know, those guys. You know, clearly, like that's the only thing that was an indication of is that right-handed defensemen are suddenly become incredibly valuable. So, like again, in the draft, why aren't you almost? You know, to me. You should pretty much just start taking right-handed defensemen. Why not?
I mean, it's not a bad idea. Even if they don't end up
being very good, you'll be able to flip them around for something.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Just draft centers.
That's why I was surprised Brant Clark fell in the draft like you did. Like, it was interesting to watch that draft. Like, he almost fell to the Coyotes pick, the Canucks' old pick, which would have just been the biggest salt in the wound moment.
I wouldn't be here on Twitter or doing this if that happened. I would have just deleted all my accounts and packed it in.
This might go against what you guys have been saying, but if the trade was just Garland for ninth overall pick straight up,
hell no.
Would have done it.
No. God damn it, Bill. No.
Why not?
Because he's 25.
What's the chances that someone from ninth overall
better, much better.
First line caliber player.
I will take Gunther is a hell of a player. He has a
I was just going to say, would you do it straight up for Gunther, knowing that it's Gunther there?
Yeah.
Hell no.
The chances of him becoming Garland is pretty low if you look at history. So
here's why I do it. I'm with Bill on this one. This is the reason why I would do it. This was a weaker draft. The core is at that age bracket already. So if you don't do that trade, you're either looking at moving JT Miller now,
awesome,
or potentially Bo Horvat, right? Because that's the age bracket. But they clearly want to win with those guys. Who helps them more? They've got the cap space there that they freed up. Garland fits the core group better.
This is exactly the type of trade that I'm talking about that makes us better today and worse tomorrow.
Yes.
These are the short-sighted moves that I'm talking about. That is the reason I'm so frustrated with the team trying to build a playoff team and not a Stanley Cup contending team. I do not give a shit that we are better today. We are not good enough this year, and we're not in a position to be good enough in the near future with this core, with the JT Miller and Bo Horvat, to compete for a Stanley Cup. So it doesn't fucking matter that we're able to make the playoffs. Who cares about making the playoffs? You make a round, you make two, you lose, and then you're just like every other loser that year. Who cares? I have no interest in watching this team make the playoffs every year and lose in the first and second round. I have zero interest in supporting it.
You're right. What I should have said is, I think in terms of just straight up value, ninth for Garland makes sense. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at it from a perspective of building a long-lasting contender, then
ninth is obviously
right.
That is your focus as the GM. The right, fans yeah. are the players are supposed to be the impulsive ones that want to win today, and that's why we hire a professional who is supposed to be the guy who says no, we're building this business the right way with a long-term view in mind, and does it with a rational long-term perspective with the best interest of the franchise at heart. That is not what Jim Benning is doing.
Well, and I think that's boat sailed at this point, right? Like at this point, they can't, right?
And they've gone all in. That's why he's had to go. That's why it was a colossal mistake to bring him back this year. Because again, he has 2 years on his contract. So now going into this next year, he makes the playoffs, he improves. Guess what happens? A Jim Benning contract extension.
Yeah,
we are fucked, guys. We are fucked.
Yeah, no, no argument, right? Like the rebuild that we all have wanted for a very long time never happened. It's been kind of band-aided together for years. But really the only way to now go back and do that is either to strip everything down to its bones and toss Jim, toss Green, toss everybody and restart. Francesco as well, probably. Or take a time machine, right? Like that's really the only options that we have.
No, because you could have taken a half step back. Again, you trade out JT Miller, you trade out Schmidt. Horvat he's still 26. He is not that old. 28 when you're not with a realistic chance, that is old. That's when you absolutely should be starting to unload that player. Apparently, or maybe again, I've been lied to, we'd be able to get double what we traded for JT Miller. So there's two first round picks and two third round picks right there. And again, it's not that we haven't rebuilt, Sean. We have conducted ourselves in a way that we are competing for a Stanley Cup. These are the kind of moves that you make when you are already a natural organic playoff team trying to put yourself over the edge. Not when you are a shitty, horrible team trying to make yourself a playoff team. And when you do that, and when you trade out this many futures, the cupboards are bare. Like we saw the
Well, there's no tradable assets. Yeah,
and that's factoring Pod Coles and Hoglander. Pod Coles and Rathbone. Those guys all are NHL players. And then what? So the contracts are ticking down until they're going to get paid. And now who's the next wave coming in? No one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. The one thing that I'm not even sure if I agree with this or not, but some people have brought up the fact that if we don't start winning, then the best players would want out. That might be the only reason to maybe try and be more competitive. But the best solution is the thing you said, just like building like a long-term winner. That's for sure. But I don't know if like, that argument has merit, you think?
When you fire the GM and coach and do a clean sweep, you get a reset with the players.
Yeah.
What is true is the players are running out of patience with Jim Benning. When a GM who has been in charge for as long as he has no longer proves that he can put together a winner, the players lose faith in the GM's ability to manage that team. Not the organization, not the city. So again, you fire the GM, new GM comes in, new lease on life for all the players. So again, not a concern of mine.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's jump into the prospect cupboards here. Cause obviously with the Canucks, they didn't have many picks. They had one in the first four rounds of this draft. And then they went at 41st overall with Danila Klimovich. What are your thoughts on the pick? Because my instant reaction was heartbreak because I really wanted Logan Stankoven for personal reasons. Like, I just love the kid, right? Like, he's a great kid. He's a Kamloops boy, plays for the Blazers. Insane talent. Like, I have him as a top 20 talent in the draft. He slides all the way to 41, all because he's 5'8". He doesn't play like he's 5'8".
He's 48. 41 was our pick.
Yeah. No, he's 5'8". Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. You said he slid in the draft.
To
41. It doesn't matter. And to me, again, he's a boomer bust pick. And yeah. To me, you make boomer bust picks when you have multiple picks, when you have several picks, and you can take a chance. Because again, the downside of this is, let's say he doesn't end up becoming an NHL player. Now we have nothing to show for the first rounds, the second round, or the third round. And or again, of course, round.
Yeah.
Or sorry. Yeah. We had a second and two fifths in it, right?
Yeah.
That's the problem. And again, apparently what they're doing is the opposite of going, well, we have so few picks, so we really need some of them to hit. So they took all these swings, hoping maybe one or two of them pan out. Again, to me, that is a strategy you only employ when you have, let's say, I don't know, like 5 second round picks in the second round, which seems like a crazy number for any team to actually accumulate. But believe it or not, it happens.
It happens in the desert. I've been blown away by that. But Bill, what are your thoughts on Klimovich and the pick?
I mean, first off, Armstrong is like doing his best Sam Presti impression, right? Just like hoarding all the picks. Like he's gonna have one draft just by himself and just making all the picks.
And the second round belongs to the Coyotes. Come up and make 32 picks, please. Thanks.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm not too familiar with the player, but it's interesting that they think he might actually get a legit shot during training camp, right? And I don't think anyone expects him to actually make the team, but if he's going to go down to the A, I think that would be pretty good for his development, obviously, because like we don't want a repeat of what happened with Putkosen in the KHL. So, and like, yeah, Malcolm, what you said about making those boomer bust picks, that's true. Yeah, like you're only supposed to make those picks when you have an abundance of them, right? And just looking at the cupboards going down the road, I think the only way we can recoup picks is by trading down. I don't see any other way of actually making any more or actually like receiving any more picks. I think what the team should do is to trade down and accumulate more picks. And even then we wouldn't have an abundance of them. So if we want to like lengthen this competitive window, we might have to trade down from some more picks, but then select players who are safer, I guess, so that they could have a potential, they could potentially contribute when they're on their ELCs. But I don't know, that's just how I see
exactly.
It.
Exactly. If you've got a guy in the second round that you are confident in will play in the NHL, you take that player, especially when you don't have a pick in the first and you don't have a pick in the third. To me, what happened is they clearly fell in love with this guy, but they went, well, shit, we don't have a pick in the third.
After one tournament, one thing.
Yeah, and apparently one U18 tournament.
Is all Yo, Levy 2.0.
Yeah. But again, they've clearly fell in love with this guy who was going to projected to be a third round pick, went, well, we don't have a third round pick, so we'll take him with our second round pick. Like,
which I would have no problem with.
What they should have done is if they loved him so much, then trade down, our second for, you know, a third and an additional fourth. And then you have, you know, you start accumulating assets and then you take one swing and one safe pick. Like, I don't understand how you can go, like, you know, with the risk involved, how it makes sense to have Klimovich as our top prospect instead of Stankoven. Like, you know, Stankoven, yeah, he's not going to be a first line, you know, incredible talent or anything like that, but you're picking at 41.
No, but I can almost certainly say that he'll be an NHL player.
He will play NHL games. Yeah. I can, you know.
Well, and there's other, the thing too is like, there's other guys that I had, you know, I had rated higher than Klimovich. I actually knew nothing about him. He came out of the blue to me.
I never heard his name before in my life.
Me neither.
And like, we've talked to lots of scouts on here, you know, Ferrari and Robinson and all sorts of people that we've talked to. I've never heard Klimovich.
Did you notice Scott Morrow went 40?
Yeah. I know. Right before.
I preempted my text to Tony because I knew if not, I'd be getting it. Because I remember when I said that too, and when he came on, I'm like, just watch him go one pick ahead of us.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, Brent Clark goes 8, which again is what I
said. We were one pick off of both.
With Cam, right?
Yeah, both yeah. Clark and Morrow. Well, and like, I want to be clear. I have no issue with the player. I really like Klimovich. And the more that I've learned about him, the more clips I've seen of him, the kid's very talented. He's got lots of speed, great hands, good shot, high motor. He's got some discipline issues for sure.
A bit too high.
Yeah, a bit too high of a motor, right? He runs a little too hot.
Yep.
But the thing for me was the players left on the board. Like, you have a Ville Koivunen, you have Logan Stankoven, you've got Pennelly, you've got like there was a few, like there was quite a few, even like a Sean Behrens. I really like Sean Behrens. I was shocked by the talent that was left sitting there. Nikita Chibrikov, like if you really wanted a Russian, there was a first round level talent in Nikita Chibrikov just sitting there. He went just a couple picks later as well. Pennelly went one pick after us because LA traded up to take him because I'm sure they couldn't believe that he was there. I have no problem with Klimovich, but I do wish that we would have traded back in that instance and potentially grabbed one of those other guys and Klimovich. I don't know. Like I understand the philosophy too of signing him right away, bringing him over to the North America. I at first, like just for pure talent level, thought that the Q would be the best spot for him because I would love for him to go somewhere and be the star player. But it's looking more and more like AHL will be where he is in Abbotsford, which now kind of understanding like the hands-on approach that they want to take with developing him, I'm totally cool with that because he does need a lot. He's pretty raw. Like people need to understand that this is not a pick that should be making the team this year or is expected to make the team this year. Like it's shocking generally for a second round pick to be signed first out of everybody in his draft class, and understand that was more a there's political reasons for that, pulling him away from the KHL where we've just experienced and been burned a little bit by Pod Colson's situation, and having some more control over his development and developing that raw talent that's there so that they can make sure that it's a hit.
And the fact that he's raw is a bit of a surprise to me because, I mean, like in terms of the pick, because like if we're going all in, then we need players who could contribute now, even if they don't have as high a ceiling. So again, we should have traded back, gone some more picks. And then maybe if you want, you can still take him, but also take someone who's a bit of a safer pick so that we have a flowing amount of prospects on their ELCs who could contribute, especially since we're going all in.
Yeah, totally agree. I did like what they did in the later rounds, though. They went really heavy into the Swedish pool. They took a couple big defensemen. That seems to be the creme de la creme right now for Jim Benning is big defensemen. He went big in free agency on them. He went big on the draft in them. And I could see that being a trend moving forward with everything. But I liked that he took kind of higher upside swings in the later rounds. That's what I want the later rounds to be. Second round, a little rich, but later rounds, absolutely.
You know, yeah, those last three picks, Hugo Gabrielsson, you know, seemingly he's got a great upside. And then, of course, the seventh round pick, Lucas Forssell, also seems like great upside. But the one I like the most is the Connor Lockhart.
Yes, I was just going to say.
You know, who of course didn't play last year to COVID. And of course, you know, just the basic profile mirrors a guy that very easily could have just absolutely shot up in the rankings this year to be, you know, easily could have been maybe a first or second round pick, depending upon, you know, just how well he played. But, you know, took it off due to COVID. He could be a really interesting piece too down the road. So, you know, again, all in all, based on the actual just picks we made, if you just don't look at the context, other than the Klimovich pick, which again, I'll go on record as saying I do not like, Big fan of everything else.
Yeah, I really liked the Lockhart pick. I was really excited about that. Just the huge upside potential there, that can become a steal in the draft. And that's, I think that's the part about this particular draft that made it so unique and so interesting, was that these later rounds, there was guys that should have and potentially would shoot up in the rankings, and they didn't get to because, they didn't get to play in the OHL this season. So it'd be awesome to see. Hopefully we get a better look at that process for, and that development for Connor Lockhart moving forward, when we're able to, when he's able to actually get some games under his belt. So before we wrap, I wanted to talk about a couple other things too. Obviously we've already covered the free agents as best as we could in the short period of time, the draft, the expansion draft, all of that. There was a lot of these cheaper contracts that were brought on in free agency that were cheaper bets, like the Brady Keepers and stuff like that, that I really liked. I really liked the bargain bin shopping in free agency that Jim did. Two guys I'll say that really stood out to me that I think can really crack the team this year. Phil DiGiuseppe, there I got it, and Brad Hunt. I honestly think that those two guys can really challenge for roster spots ahead of a lot of the guys that are already in our system right now.
Well, and Luke Shen, I think,
yeah.
We all really liked the like 6 or 7 games that we saw out of him playing with Quinn Hughes. How did I do that?
They're so close.
Luke Hughes. That's I feel that's honest.
Yeah.
So that right side, Lawrence pitcher with Harvey Two-Face, summing up our D. Was
I died over that.
Excellent, but I think, honestly, just a little too nice to the left side of RD. I'm high on Rathbone as well, but, I'd say unproven, to say the least, and then OEL is a big question mark.
We'll put a giant question mark, yeah.
OEL is, I think, how we should be typing his name. It's four letters, not just three. And then, of course, Quinn Hughes, a beauty at the top there, but... they should be exciting games, I will say, to watch, because they will be high scoring. Godspeed to Thatcher Demko. I hope you have been, bulking up, and, you're not going to bruise all that easily, because I expect you to see a lot of rubber this year.
Halak's going to get those 9 games, 10 games, and he's going to work on them.
Is going to hit those 10 games for sure.
Going to make them work on those.
It's going to be an interesting one, Deuter. It's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. I liked a lot of the bargain bin shopping, because I had sent a mock. I went on Cap Friendly and I was like, okay, there's a lot of these kind of cheap bets. How many of them could we fit? And I was able to fit all of the cheap bets on it. And that's even I went back and updated it with the contracts that they actually signed, and they all still fit. So, the Pia Suitors, I really liked that Brady Keeper was selected. I had him picked. I didn't have Phil DiGiuseppe, but I really like that as a fourth line defensive player coming in. Brad Hunt kind of came out of nowhere for me, which was really cool. But there's a lot of these guys too that they can play in either a really top tier role with Abbotsford, and I think Abbotsford's going to be quite competitive this year, which is really great news for them. But then we also have that depth that is capable of jumping up and playing in the NHL that isn't Jalen Chatfield, Ashton Sautner, Olli Olevi, like these guys that have 3, 4, 5 games under their belt, that we're not going to have to turn to them immediately in the case of injuries, that we could turn to a veteran that has been there, done that, played in the NHL, played big games. And, with the contracts that they've signed, they can go wherever. And I like that flexibility that Jim did. Tidy work for 18 contracts in 48 hours. I was just stunned by how often we were getting an update.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in a vacuum, the moves he made on July 1st, I still want to call it, we're good. The problem is the team before it was trash. So
yeah, it's a long way to go.
We haven't exactly fixed any of our issues here. We still have a tire fire of a team, especially on defense.
So, okay, before we jump to to concluding here, was there any picks or trades, or we won't say picks, free agent signings that you would deem to be, that you really, really liked? Because there's a couple for me that I really, really liked, and obviously a lot that I didn't.
Around the league or
with the Canucks? Just around the league in general, because it was a busy, there were some huge ones.
Amongst the ones I like Frederik Andersen at 4.5, 2 years for Carolina, especially after it seems like they really bungled up that in the Djokovic situation.
Yeah.
I'd say, I'm somewhat surprised at what the Red Wings have done. I thought that they would be looking to make some trades to either bring in some, bad cap and assets, or start just spending a little bit more in free agency themselves. I think Dougie Hamilton in New Jersey, for New Jersey to pull the top UFA at what was, I think, a very fair cap hit for a player like Dougie Hamilton. That was a good one.
Zach Werenski and Seth Jones signed for.
Yeah. And as a UFA.
Yeah.
So I think that was some tidy business. And to me, the biggest loser is Colorado, which is I'm very gleeful to say. Yeah. They got cocky and arrogant and wasted so much time trying to lowball Landeskog at reported offers at 5.15, insulting, and spent so much time doing that it seems like they ran out of time on Grubauer. Based on his comments, I'm paraphrasing here, but something along the lines is they had their time, they had their opportunity. Clearly, that's not a player who felt like they were negotiated fairly with. And then by the time that they circled back on Landeskog and ended up giving him the $7 million he wanted and the 8-year term he wanted, so fully ended up having a cave on that deal, then turned around and paid a first, a third, and a right-handed top prospect defenseman for a 31-year-old goalie with injury history and 1 year left on his deal. Like,
that's never played more than 31 games. I was shocked how many people were really wildly supportive of that deal. Like, they were like, oh, Ranta is going to be a star. And I'm like, Ranta hasn't played more than 31 games. Like, he's played one.
Darcy Kemper is who they.
Yes. Kemper. Yes. Right. Sorry. Ranta went to Carolina as well. So, yeah. Darcy Kemper hasn't played more than 31 games more than once in his career. One time he's played over that threshold. And again, 31-year-old goaltender. And that's a huge haul. Like, for me, Arizona's cleaned house this, they've done really well this offseason.
Yeah, they did very well too.
I've been really stunned by them. The Dougie Hamilton signing was fantastic. I really like what Columbus has done. I think they paid a little bit too, Werenski's a little rich, but you got to retain some of these big star players as well. And I think if you're wanting to, what I think Columbus is trying to do is trying to do a very quick rebuild. They're not trying to do a full teardown rebuild, but they're trying to build around that Werenski age group. And Werenski is 24. So you're trying to get the Adam Boqvist, you're filling in that age bracket. So I like what they did with that. Gained a bunch of picks.
There's a Columbus premium.
Yes, there's a Columbus premium. Especially since you haven't seen stars stick around.
Exactly. To me, that's a great deal for Columbus, in my opinion. It's not that much more expensive. Werenski's a hell of a player. Like, he is a hell of a player. I expect him to be named the next captain. And yeah, I'm sure that negotiation went very smoothly. Like, you guys tired of seeing superstar players walk out this door? Okay, well, here's my number.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I've really liked what they... I like the one thing that I love about Yarmo is that nothing is done half-ass, right? Like, they don't go for it kind of with one foot in the water. They dive right in. They go and get Duchesne. They go get Dzingel. They go... They've got Panarin. They've got Bobrovsky. They know that they're going for it. Or when they... Now, when they do a teardown, that they just go for it. Seth Jones is gone. They just go for it. And I love that because I think with sports being cyclical in nature, it can often take a long time for teams to recognize where they are in that cycle, that things are on the upswing or things are on the downturn. And it takes them too long to recognize it, and it cripples their chances of capitalizing on their window or turning things around quickly. And Columbus is never fallen victim to that with Yarmo. Like, everything's all in or all out. And I love that.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. So, I got to run. But yeah, it's fun chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to get at it with another episode here. After 2 weeks, lots to cover. We'll see what is ahead here for the Canucks. I don't imagine there's too much, but we do still expect Hughes and Pettersson contracts soon. Still have Jason Dickinson as well that needs to be signed. And I suppose Olli Juolevi as well in there. So those would be some upcoming check marks that we're looking for the Canucks. Maybe we see some more stuff as they look to capitalize on a very quick, I would say, 2-year window at this point to win. So thanks for joining us again this week. And we look forward to another episode next week with some more things to talk about.
Allow me to introduce Pie Stick Vodka, a new way to celebrate victory. Gather around the glass with an award-winning, ultra-premium Canadian-made vodka. You probably won't listen when I say Pie Stick Vodka has a smooth, hard-hitting taste, or that it's developed in the birthplace of hockey. You won't listen when I say Pie Stick Vodka is a tribute to the game of hockey, or when I tell you it's distilled 4 times using Canada's purest mountain spring water to provide an authentic, remarkable flavor. But maybe you will listen when I say it comes in a f***ing hockey stick. Showcase your passion for hockey with our limited edition hand-blown hockey stick bottle. Whether you're celebrating victory or drinking to defeat, High Stick Vodka is better after every shot. Visit us at highstickvodka.com. It also comes in this regular bottle. Celebrate victory. Drink responsibly.